Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you conversations that shape Columbus, straight from your not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices like yours come together for lunch in downtown Columbus to unpack the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. Columbus's major airports are much more than just places to catch a flight. They're a first impression for visitors and a critical link for global business. This week, we explore what's ahead for aviation in our region and look at how growth will depend on new airport innovations and investments, like the brand new $2 billion passenger terminal now being built right here in Columbus. Joining us this week, Darren Griffin, the new president and CEO of the Columbus Regional Airport Authority, and Deborah Shearer, senior vice president of global trade and investment with One Columbus. Your host is Jared Smalley, anchor with NBC4 and host of Columbus 2.0. Let's take off in this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Airport Advantage, building Central Ohio's next economy.
Thank you very much. For any event that I moderate or host or whatever, there is one guarantee I make, and it is airport related. We will have an on-time departure today. All right. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here. And it's a topic that I'm really passionate about. A couple years ago, I did an entire series for Channel 4 focused on the airport. And it was before this groundbreaking actually began on the development of the new facility. And there were two lessons I learned very quickly in putting that series together. Transportation is the heart of an economy. And the front door to any city is the airport. It's the first impression that people get, your travelers get when they come in to meet you. And learning those two things, I think, open your eyes to the importance of the development of an airport and what it can do for a city, an economy, a culture, all of these things that are critically important. So with that in mind, these two excellent guests that we can talk to today about this exact topic, Darren, we'll start with you on this. It's a $2 billion investment. I mean, this is serious, serious business there. When you arrived at the Airport Authority, this process was already underway, but when you got there, you have experience in your background of leading development of other airports in Reno and in Oregon. And I wanted to get a little idea of how complicated a mission is this?
Well, thank you, Jared. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you to the National Veterans Museum. As an Army veteran, I really appreciate this venue and just the opportunity to be here. Great question, right? It is complicated, and it was part of what I looked at as I was considering this really significant career move for me was the opportunity to be joining a team that's taking on a $2 billion new terminal. There are almost 400 commercial service airports, and by commercial service, I mean you can buy an airplane ticket and get on an airplane. There are almost 400 of those in the United States. There are about six or seven of us this decade that are trying to do this, which is to build a new terminal and in one night, in early 2029, flip the switch and move into it. It's incredibly complicated. It takes hundreds or thousands of people to do it. This conversation and this effort began in the Columbus Regional Airport Authority more than 10 years ago. I've read the minutes of meetings from 2016, 2015, the planning that goes into it, the design, and of course now sort of the crux of it all is the construction and keeping an operating airport. It's extremely rare in the industry to see a community take on a complete new terminal build, and we're doing it here. And that was part of the reason why I was interested in this opportunity, because it is complicated. It is just about the most difficult thing to do in this business, short of a brand new airport, which are even rarer. But it's an exciting opportunity, and I'm honored to be here to participate in it.
Well, Deborah is a great example of this. You just showed me your travel log. I don't know anybody who travels more than you do. I mean, you're maybe the most loyal customer to the Columbus Airport. You do business all over the world, in fact. And one of the things I think is most interesting about this is that you have probably as great a perspective as anyone can about how an airport can help grow an economy. And that's what I'd like to begin with. To give people a better impression of why the airport and ease of travel in and out of this region matters so much for business development.
Thank you, and thank you, CMC, for having me here again. It's a real honor to be back with you. You know, I have four international companies visiting the Columbus region this week, many of which who have never been to Ohio before. It's their first entry. So as they come into an airport, it literally is the front door of our region and welcoming. It needs to represent a welcoming place, represent coming into the region and showcasing what we have here and what we offer. But the ease of travel is equally as important. There's not a conversation that goes by with either a domestic company or an international company on how is the quickest way I can get there? Can I get in and out efficiently? What times are the flights happening? Do I have to transfer in a hub which may potentially delay my arrival or departure? So it is a critical point to every conversation. Nearly every request for information that we receive for a project has a line on it asking about what are the routes? Can I get there efficiently?
That's pressure. That requires an investment. And so, Darren, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, what people can expect in this. I think there are some general understandings. It's going to be very modern. It's going to be sleek. It's going to be nice. All the bells and whistles you might expect from a modern airport. But can you help people understand a little bit more of the thought behind what's going into this airport? Maybe what travelers who are listening today or listening online, what can they expect to see when they show up to that front door in 2029, 2030? What are they going to see?
Well, again, a great question, and I get asked this a lot, and I've been here almost 6 months, so my answers are getting a little bit better each time as I figure out what I'm talking about here. What I saw when I looked at this opportunity was a really genius approach to, one, it's about simplifying the travel experience and making it intuitive for people that have never visited our airport to know where to walk. It's one of the most intimidating parts about the airport experience is confusion or uncertainty or time pressure. And also for those that have used the facility, that it is just so efficient. And so they've done that by squeezing everything together. The parking and the rental cars and the checkpoint are closer than ever together. You'll walk across from those garages, a sky bridge. You'll be looking at the checkpoint. You'll go down towards it. You'll see beyond the checkpoint into the central marketplace. You'll intuitively know where you're going, which relaxes the consumer, makes the guest experience a better, really just opportunity to enjoy the experience, be proud of the airport. The security screening, when you build a new terminal, everything about this facility will be state of the art, whether it's the baggage screening that you don't see or your screening through as a customer. We will have state of the art technology. It will be faster than it's ever been before. When we open in early 2029, we will be the premier airport experience in the country. And that is the goal, right? And it's about efficiency. It's about simplicity. It's about making it easier than it is today to travel. And that is the thing that I would want people to remember as they think about this experience that's coming. It'll be beautiful. It'll have the greatest food, beverage offerings that the region has to offer in Central Ohio, but it will just be easier to fly through and get to your car, get to your family, or get to the gate, whichever direction you're going. And that is the brilliance of the design that I take no credit for. It's two CEOs before me, Elaine and then Joe Nardoni, the leader of our program, Tom McCarthy is right here, and my entire executive team is here. I only get to sit up here because I'm the CEO. This is the team that's really doing the work. And I just want all of you to know that it's going to be an extraordinary experience and the best in the country when it opens.
I'll just comment. I was sharing with Jared before we started. I've been on 47 flights this year, and I've flown 62,000 miles already. That's both pleasure and business. Ease of getting through an airport is so important to the consumer, and especially if you're going into an airport that you're not familiar with. And so I agree that's such an important point for the consumer experience.
Can you sleep on planes?
I can. I can sleep anywhere.
Oh, you're one of those.
I am.
One of the lucky ones.
I'm one of the lucky ones.
Well, you know, when you think about, as you just mentioned there, the ease of travel into and out of an airport is critically important on so many levels: comfort of travel, enjoyment of travel, and also for business development. We had the news recently that Ohio was ranked by CNBC the number one state in America for business. That's probably a good thing, right? That is a a massive, massive opportunity for the state. And there's a number of factors that when you go through the CNBC ranking that they quote support information, why Ohio arrived at that ranking, because of less than 20 years ago, we were 30th in those rankings. Yeah, there have been some dramatic changes. One of those things that is so attractive to Ohio is because we're within a one-day drive of most of the population in America. And so there is an ease of getting to Ohio. But that next level is the air travel and the accessibility, especially for direct flights. And Deb, that's what I was curious about. Can you help us understand the importance of that, of not only the ease of travel, but even directs, the opportunity to get more places more efficiently when you're going to talk to businesses about being a part of this community?
It's a crucial decision point. I mean, when we talk about, for example, domestic travel, the airport, One Columbus, the partnership, and one of our largest automotive manufacturers in the region partnered together to go pitch an airline about additional LAX service. It was critical for them to be able to get into the market early, to be able to do a day's work, and then have the ability to come home the same day if need be, but be able to really have that connectivity. And so we move forward in a way, a lot of times with our private sector partners in going together to pitch potential flights. Additionally, you know, on the international stance, CEOs don't want to wait for 4 hours at a hub city if they, you know, don't have, they want to be direct, and it's really important for them. And given the option, it's not the most important factor in their decision-making, but it is a factor in the decision-making.
Well, it's a great point, because it's the greatest resource that we all have is time. Mm-hmm. And it's how can we use that time to our best advantage, most efficiently, most effectively. And so, Darren, to build off that, let's talk a little bit more about, and these are answering some questions that people may have just in general about the new airport and how things may change. Can you help us understand a little bit more about the process, about how direct flights are determined and how Columbus can be more competitive in that with the new facility?
Sure. And I will start this and then ask Deb to jump in here, because this is it's a team sport. When we're trying to attract new airlines or new routes from existing airlines, it's truly a team sport. It's about a business case. Every airline looks at an aircraft as a movable asset, because that's what they are. They can pick up and move that asset very quickly, and they do that now more so than I've ever seen in my career. And they're measuring the profit and loss on every route, on every aircraft. So our job is to pitch business cases based on data. And that is the number one thing that I would tell you to remember, is that we give a lot of information to the system, to the airline when you buy an airline ticket. And that data is aggregated, and we really know where people are flying, where the zip codes are that people are originating from, where you're connecting through, what day you're leaving, what day you're coming back. And so we aggregate that data, we add it to other macro level data that Deb and team put together, and pitch an airline on a route that we think either makes sense, that they can make money on, which is the litmus test. Airlines are still profit-making enterprises. They're trying to make money on every flight. And if they're not making money on a route from Columbus, they can take that aircraft and move it somewhere else. And so we try never to lose sight of that fact, that we're competing with every other aircraft on every other route. And so that is, I'll leave it there and let Deb jump in, but it really is the business case, and we work together to create the business case to get airline interest in a flying opportunity out of Columbus.
And maybe I'll just take that a step forward. You know, as we continue to have conversations with a variety of different airlines, one thing that's obviously close to my heart is transatlantic service. There's nothing that I would want more than to see a route, a nonstop flight to a location within Europe. That plane is likely going to cost for a round trip somewhere between $300,000 to $500,000 for a round trip.
Say that again.
$300,000 to $500,000. If you're talking about like a 777 or an A350, a wide body passenger carrier. So they're not going to fly that flight unless they can make money off of it. So that comes to where I would say butts in seats matter. Paid business class matters. When you think about a plane, the paid business class is basically paying in most cases for the large percentage of that flight. And so if that plane's only 50% full, they're not going to continue to fly it. And so it's our jobs to work together as a team to present that business case. This is how many people are traveling to the market. This is where we think the capacity levels are being. And from the business case, these are the companies that we believe would utilize the service. And oh, by the way, this is how much our market's growing that could contribute to your future success.
Well, let's have a conversation based on that. There is so much now about, you know, concern with the flyer, the general flyer, whether they're in business or they're just for pleasure and they're taking a trip somewhere. What are my options? And we've heard lately, in fact, we had a story about this last week that we reported that airlines are leaning toward a premium experience, and therefore you're going to pay more for that premium experience, and not necessarily de-emphasizing the value of a ticket, but catering more toward the higher end client who's willing to pay more. And as you mentioned, it's an economic decision. They're for-profit businesses. The question would be, we just lost Spirit Airlines, for example, that did service here. What are your concerns about affordability with flying in the future and where that business model for airlines is going? How can Columbus work with airlines to best compete for fares that are fair to the people who want to fly out of here?
So I would say that, you know, the airlines are very sophisticated, and they recognize there's a range of family incomes that they want to attract to fly. Of course, they do better on the front end of the aircraft, right? The more business travel they can generate, or people that are upgrading into the premium product, it allows them to make revenue on that aircraft quicker and easier than maybe some of the lower priced products. But their overall goal is, to Deb's point, his butts and seats, to put it frankly, and it is all economic levels. And so you're starting to see some of our legacy carriers adding products that are slightly less than first class or less than business class. They're stripping down some of it, so you do without some things to get a lower cost to get into the aircraft. And then if you want to upgrade with more space or your baggage or other amenities that you, the traveler, might want, you make those decisions, but they need you in the aircraft to begin with. There's more and more sort of airline pricing strategies aimed at this. We're still well positioned to have a wide array of airlines offering service, whether it's ultra low cost, as we call them, which is Allegiant out of Rickenbacker, it's Sun Country, it's Frontier to some degree, although they're trying to move away from that a little bit. And then you have the other airlines. On the day we lost Spirit, we gained JetBlue, who had left 18 years ago. And, you know, seeing an airline go out of business, I'm sad to say that Spirit is the latest in a long history of my 30-year career. We can all think about airlines that used to exist that don't anymore, and the list is shorter now than it has ever been. That creates competitive challenges for us. There are less airlines for Deb and I to go pitch with our teams for new service here, but there is still a healthy mix. There's still an opportunity for low-cost seats for people to fly, but there's no question that the airline emphasis on premium is their efforts to generate the profit that they need to on every aircraft. As you see, the price of fuel, when it goes up for a car, it goes up for an aircraft even more significantly, and this has not been a good year for that, which directly detracts from their profit level.
Let me follow up there on Rickenbacker, because this is a city with a three-airport strategy, if you will, between not only John Glenn, but Rickenbacker, and also Bolton. OSU has its own airport. There's other ways to take a trip through the air out of this city. But I'm wondering about, as you move into this new facility and evolve in an airport, how do those other facilities play their role?
It's really great, the three airport system that we have here. They all work together. They're all niche, complementary airports. And that, again, was one of the attractive pieces to me as I looked at the opportunity. It's a perfectly laid out airport system where the majority of our airline passenger traffic is at John Glenn, as well as corporate and business traffic. Rickenbacker is incredibly well positioned for more growth in military flying, in cargo flying, air cargo, supply and logistics around that airport. Tremendous capacity there that we barely scratched the surface on. And Bolton Field is a great place to go learn to fly. If you want to own a private aircraft and fly recreationally, a fantastic facility for that. All three of our airports have air traffic control towers. That is a blessing. There are at least 30 airports on a list today that want an air traffic control facility at their airport and can't get it because the funding doesn't exist, the federal government won't support it. We have three amazing transportation facilities that we can build economic growth off of, and they work together by design, and it was a brilliant design.
So airlines have demands of us, and we have demands of airlines. I wanted to ask you, Deb, as someone who travels quite a bit, and you're also working with companies who have their demands of what they expect from an airport, what they expect from air service. When you think about, you know, Wi-Fi and the evolution of what the onboard offerings are now, things are much different than they were even just a couple years ago. What I'm getting at is, what are the expectations? What are the realistic expectations? When you go meet with a company and you talk about the travel in and out of here, what do they tell you? What do companies tell you that is so critically important to them, not only about the ability to physically get there, but the comfort with which they get there?
It's interesting. It's not only just about the airport, but it's also about the surrounding amenities and how those integrate into the airport. So first of all, strictly from the airline standpoint, they want to be able to get in and out quickly. They want flights to be on time. They want baggage delivered efficiently. From the airport standpoint, that's it. However, they want to be able to get their rental car very easily. So ease of access in and out. They don't want the airport to be located an hour and a half outside the city. That's such a blessing that we have that we can get in and out of our passenger airport on such a quick manner. And they want to limit delays as best as you can.
And obviously there's a number of factors in that. You can't control the weather. We try. Poor Dave Mazza. Fights his heart out every day, but you can't control these things. What I'm getting at is there's a number of factors that are out of your control when it comes to the service. One of the things that is also this evolving issue is AI and cybersecurity, all of these things that can factor into the computer systems that are used to operate our travel systems. So what I'm getting at is with the new airport, what does technology look like in terms of efficiency and maybe even combating some of those issues that a lot of airports are dealing with around the world?
Sure. Obviously, a new terminal is a great opportunity to just leap forward in terms of technological aspects of our business. And technology should always be used to improve the guest experience. In an airport operating environment, it's to make things quicker, make things easier, make things more intuitive. This terminal will be loaded with all of that. There's a lot that goes on behind the walls and in places that the customers don't see, where we're processing bags or we're working with law enforcement agencies on cybersecurity. You know, we have folks dedicated to that 24/7, and this is an opportunity to not only radically improve the technology that is customer facing, but also everything that's back of house, as we call it. When you build it from scratch, like we are, it's that reboot opportunity. And so AI is changing every day, it seems like. Certainly, this facility was designed about 2 years ago, I think, Tom, and a lot's changed in 2 years, right? So one of the most important things for us will be that technology makes this terminal more flexible and more modular than any that ever existed, that we can grow it, we can repurpose it, we can change direction as the industry changes direction, as consumer needs change, and as industry brings technology that we're not familiar with right now. But the ability to adapt that, a new facility like this really creates opportunities for us to just go to new levels of flexibility.
Let me follow up on that with both of you, because we've talked so much about recruiting business, but what about growing our own business? And at the airport, you've mentioned back of house. We've already talked about the new amenities in the front. I think generally people would like to know some basics in terms of what's our employment what's that going to change from the old version of the airport to the new airport? How many more people are employed? What new industries, opportunities are created with the new airport? Can you help us understand a little bit more about how we can grow ourselves just by building this facility?
You want to start? Okay. So the growth comes in all kinds of different directions. First, the obvious question that I get asked, does this automatically mean new flights? It's not a build it and they will come proposition. They're coming anyways. That's the reality. We're growing as a community and as a region. The $2 billion price tag that we talk about is largely backed by the airlines. We borrow most of that, $1.67 billion of that. The Airport Authority borrows that money, and the rent for the airlines triples in the terminal building. They have to vote yes for this. They're only saying yes to this because they are going to grow. So airline growth is coming here. Whether we, we can debate the speed of that growth or the measure of that growth, but the growth is coming. And so the terminal allows us to grow flights, to grow the size of aircraft that we're using. The employee workforce will certainly adapt to that. Technology helps maintain efficiency through the facility. Also, this means the end of the existing terminal. So we are going to tear down the entire terminal complex as we all know it today. That's a growth opportunity, right? It allows us to park more airplanes than we can right now. That's really important for airlines. It also presents land on that John Glenn campus that will be redeveloped in some way. We don't know what that will be yet, but there's all kinds of growth opportunities that directly come out of the terminal building, and then I'll let Deb take a stab at some of the extended growth.
Yeah, I'll just say, you ask about attracting businesses, but there's also a number of companies here within the state, within the region, that support airports. And, I can think of a couple, one that makes parking systems that you'll see in many of the parking garages around. They're a company that can grow because we're adding more machines. The conveyors that are used underneath with the baggage, we have a company that's located here that's a specialty of theirs. So that helps existing companies that are already here have the opportunity to gain more business in the market.
Okay. A couple more questions here. And these are more housekeeping questions, but again, they're ones that I think people who are watching this or listening to this are genuinely curious about. On the airport website, there's plenty of information that details this, but can you give people some background? What are we growing from? The number of gates now versus the gates that will be coming? International opportunities? I think there's going to be an international section of the airport. Can you help us understand a little bit more about how that's going to function?
Sure. So it is fundamentally, we're going from 29 contact gates, as we call them now, where an aircraft parks and you connect a jet bridge to it, to 36. That's a 20-something percent increase in gate capacity. But it's more than just that. The gates that we have today aren't all created equal, and that we can't park certain size aircraft at certain gates. Or if we have two large aircraft, you can't park them side by side. And on the interior of the experience, many of the hold rooms are about half the size of what they should be because they were built for aircraft that were smaller. As Columbus grows, the gauge of aircraft that want to fly here and travel through here has grown. And the hold room experience will double. Across the system. There will actually be a place for you to walk in there and sit down, which is oftentimes hard to find now, and that's a really basic customer amenity. So the gate count increase is great. There will be two international gates, a Customs and Border Patrol facility integrated into the terminal building. That alone doesn't lead to international flights, though. We have to work together to go chase those flights, but you have to have the infrastructure.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Columbus's three major airports are much more than places to just catch a flight. They're a first impression for visitors and a critical link for global businesses. This week, we're exploring what's ahead for aviation in our region and looking at how growth will depend on new airport innovations and investments, like the brand new $2 billion passenger terminal now being built in Columbus. This week's panelists are Darren Griffin with the Columbus Regional Airport Authority and Deborah Shearer with One Columbus. Your host is Jared Smalley with NBC4. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Airport Advantage, Building Central Ohio's Next Economy, after a short break.
We've been to Mars and back, learned lessons from ancestry, and seen peace forged after generations of conflict. That's just a small sample of the leadership experiences we've uncovered in our interviews with the world's top leaders on innovating leadership, co-creating our future. I'm Maureen Metcalf. In our weekly podcast, we talk with CEOs, researchers, prime ministers, and more as they share their experiences, philosophies, and real-world lessons learned about becoming successful leaders. It's all part of the WCBE podcast experience at WCBE.org and the WCBE app and on NPR One.
I know when you hear podcasts, you may think, I'm not great with technology. I don't want to have one more thing to worry about. But I'm here to tell you, you're missing out on so many amazing stories. And WCBE has made it easier than ever to listen to their own curated list of locally produced podcasts. Just go to WCBE.org and click the podcast experience. You don't have to learn how to use any new technology. Just click on the podcast you want to hear and click play. And don't forget to listen to my show, The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent.
Hi, this is Sue Foley, inviting you to listen to Music Journeys. Hear local and national artists share how the love of music began and what inspired their latest project. Mike Foley blends it all together with some music. Now, you can't believe him if he says he's related to me and inherited my musical talent, but you can be sure that other Foley will deliver a worthwhile listening experience too.
I guess I'm all right being that other Foley. Listen to Music Journeys Saturday afternoons at 3:30.
And in the podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Columbus's three major airports are much more than places to catch a flight. They're a first impression for visitors and a critical link for global business. This week, we explore what's ahead for aviation in our region and look at how growth will depend on new airport innovations and investments, like the brand new $2 billion passenger terminal now being built in Columbus. Joining us this week, Darren Griffin, the new president and CEO of the Columbus Regional Airport Authority, and Deborah Shearer, Senior Vice President of Global Trade and Investment with One Columbus. Your host is Jared Smalley, anchor with NBC4. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Airport Advantage, Building Central Ohio's Next Economy.
We're adding 5,300 spaces to park your car in the parking garage that you see being built right now. That will be a very short walk in addition to the existing garage. Access and ease of access to this terminal facility will be greater than it has ever been. And that is a big part of the thought around this. A lot of the behind the scenes stuff, $100+ million inline baggage screening system, checkpoint technology, that the slowest part of your screening process is soon to become how quickly you can put your belt and jacket back on, because your bag will be waiting for you. You'll simply walk through a scanning machine. We will become the slow part of the process. And how many times are you standing there waiting for one person who's sitting there looking at your bag, trying to decide if they're going to let it through or not, right? The AI alone changing bag screening technology is extraordinary. And we don't have it here yet. Most airports don't have it. But this new terminal presents the opportunity for us to engage the TSA and say, the best equipment you have should be going into the new terminal building in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm confident that we have their support on that. But it's always a negotiation, and it's always a long journey with the federal government, but they're our partner, and we're pretty confident about that. So hopefully that answers some of that.
Maybe I'll just comment on the addition of additional flights, and Darren, dig me out of my hole if I go too deep. You know, as we talked about, airlines are for-profit entities, and so the desire, the capacity has to, the need for capacity has to be there before they're going to add additional nonstop flights out of this marketplace. However, we do go after airlines and say, we think this is an opportunity. We have been talking to several different carriers for transatlantic service. We're one of the largest cities in the country that don't currently have nonstop transatlantic service. We think that's important. Our businesses are telling us that's important, so we are putting a priority on that. Ultimately, airlines don't like risk, so it's up to them and for us to come to an agreement on what that looks like, how often they're going to fly, what type of plane they would fly into this particular market. But we're closer than we've ever been.
Well, Deb, let me follow up on one thing. We actually talked about this yesterday a little bit when we were talking about what we're going to do here today. And one of the things that struck me immediately was that the airport is a massive part of any city's transportation strategy, but clearly it's not the only part. Here we have tremendous investment that has just been made in COTA to grow the Linkus plan and to develop that throughout the city and even the region. We are the biggest city in America without rail. And it is a huge concern for a lot of people. They're curious about how could all of these things blend together. My curiosity is this. Is there an opportunity to grow access to this new airport via means of transportation that maybe people haven't thought about before? Obviously, there's going to be more parking, and that's a wonderful thing. It's a car-first area. That makes total sense. But in terms of people physically getting there, other than taking a cab or an Uber, could there be the possibility of a train or some way to link the core of downtown and the suburban areas to this new airport?
I'd love to see that personally. I think it's a conversation we're all open to. Darren, I'll let you maybe expound upon whether those conversations are in place now.
So a lot of great thought has been put into the multimodal capacity of this new terminal complex. And so there will be a ground transportation center that's located between that existing rental car center and the new parking garage that's being built that's sort of dedicated for COTA and direct bus transit. As far as a future light rail system or rail of some kind, I think the airport would always stand ready to have that conversation and figure out where on our campus that could connect to. I personally experienced that in Portland, Oregon. There is a light rail system there that connects directly into the terminal building. It's not easy to do, and it's complicated for us because we work really under the Federal Aviation Administration, and oddly, they don't care that much about trains. So, you know, that was a real difficulty for us in Portland, but hopefully they've evolved in that thinking a little bit. Multimodal capabilities at airports are incredibly important. Everything can't be through an automobile, although that is how Americans still like to travel in many cases, and we know they are changing. And pretty soon you'll be in an Uber or Lyft that doesn't have a human being driving it, and it'll need a place to park still. From our planning and infrastructure perspective, a car is still a car, right? Whether it's autonomous, whether it's electric vehicle, that is how many people access the airport, but we are very open to multimodal. And I also have to put a plug in, and I wasn't on the prep call yesterday, so I'm sorry, but I always get on my soapbox about advanced air mobility. And that is the taxi you will be taking, Uber Air, that's going to take you from one of our airports or other places downtown around in a four-person electrically powered aircraft that are flying today. They're being tested under FAA close watch and close to certification for several models. It is not far off, and it will be another form of mass transportation that we'll all have to get used to, because they'll be flying at about 400 feet above ground. You know, but that is also something that we think about, that whether it's rail or autonomous vehicles or a piloted aircraft that you can lift off of from the top of a parking garage, all of those things are in our future to some extent.
Yeah, the Jetsons did it first.
They did, and we were closer than ever to the Jetsons as well.
You know, I was in California last year, and we took our first Waymo taxi where it's autonomous. Unbelievable.
Really? Fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
I was definitely a little skeptical before I got in, but I was all on board by the time I was.
I mean, you get in a car, there's no driver.
Yeah. It can be a little unnerving.
It's anxiety inducing. I have one more question for you all, but CMC forums are always great about audience participation. So Doug, right here, gentleman right behind the microphone, if any of you in the room have a question that you would like to ask our panel here, you're certainly more than welcome to. If you don't mind, just go meet Doug right here. Just hop up and come over and see Doug, and you can ask, well, several minutes here for questions here from the entire audience. Also, we have questions that are coming online, right, Doug? So we'll be taking those as well in the next few minutes. Before we get to that, one last thing for you all, and this is a question that I think, especially for both of you who are in this industry and travel a lot, you have your favorite airport? And what I'm getting at is, look at that look. It's like, there's so many to choose from. What I'm getting at is I think all of us have great experiences in airports. Obviously, the best experience you can have is everything goes smoothly. You know, you show up and everything's on time. But are there specific airports you can think of where you go, I'd love to have that? Or maybe even parts that would be reflected in this new airport that you think, I've seen that there. It's going to work great here. Anything come to mind?
Maybe I'll take a stab at that first. There's nothing quite like the Singapore airport. It's it's pretty unbelievable.
Was going to be my answer as well.
So Singapore.
Singapore.
Changi.
What specifically?
Changi.
Well, it's huge. There's great shopping. There's great eateries that are there. It has a garden in the middle of the airport. It's very pleasant to be in, especially if you have to have a lot of time there. I would say, though, if you haven't flown through LaGuardia lately, it has had incredible improvements. And I was in New York just a few weeks ago, and it's actually kind of a pleasant place to be these days. And I love the center water feature that they have.
Yeah. When you said LaGuardia, did you see the heads nod?
I did not, because I was looking at
you. Yeah, that's right. A lot of agreement out there. What do you think? What would you like to see reflected, maybe, some things?
You know, I wasn't anticipating that question. It's a complicated answer for an airport guy. This is my 30-something years in this business. But I would tell you that because I've spent most of my career out west, I've flown through a lot of those airports. The new Salt Lake International Airport is beautiful, it's functional, and what we're doing here has many of those same qualities. They pushed everything together for landside, you know, rental cars, parking as close as they could to the security checkpoint. It's got magnificent art. It's got a sense of place. You know you're in north central Utah. It looks like that. We are striking many of those same qualities here, and that airport has to have a sense of place. So the people that use it most are the ones that live there. And I'm really excited about what we're doing here because there's some really other great airport terminal builds, but that's a really beautiful one.
That's great. I'll give you another one. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'll just say, Darren, I'm going to give you some kudos too. I was through the Portland airport recently. Gorgeous.
It is a good airport. I couldn't answer on that one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I'll give you another one you might not be thinking of is Kansas City. They just, because I worked there, my first job in television was in Topeka, Kansas, so I flew in and out of KCI, and even the people there were like, it's a bus station with wings on the sides. It was a very odd terminal, circular, and kind of hard to find your way around. What they have built there is a gem, and I had a pleasure to fly in there right after it opened. Actually, I was out there for the NFL draft a couple years ago. When C.J. Stroud was picked, I had the pleasure to be there with him. And that terminal is breathtaking. And a lot of what they're saying, a lot of what we were learning about this airport, you can see the success in that airport about having the one centralized security with the one building that leads to a lot of success for vendors. Yeah, there's a lot of good in that. Doug, you want to go to some audience questions?
Jared, thank you so much. Thank you so much to today's panelists. If you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. If you're watching online, type your question into the chat on YouTube. Try to get to as many of those as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common, right? They can be asked in just a few sentences. And what punctuation mark does a question always end with? It ends with a question mark. Always good to remind ourselves of that. Thank you. I think I would take a chance on a Waymo taxi. I'm not ready for AI to fly my airplane. I think I like a pilot, and maybe even two. Speaking of that, Darren, you've said that an airport's biggest asset is its workforce. Apart from pilots, what jobs and skills are most important to the airport system of the future, and are we producing enough of those folks here in Central Ohio?
Great question, thank you. And I truly mean that. There are several thousand people that work at the airport in some capacity, and most of them don't work for the Airport Authority. We have 385-ish employees, and there's a couple thousand beyond us. And those jobs range from the people you see out around aircraft, working below the wing or above the wing, as we call it, as well as the people inside the terminal building, making the guest experience as great as it can be, or more technical jobs out around the airfield. And I think the answer is absolutely, we're producing the skills that we need in Central Ohio. Ohio State is an incredible partner, and all the other universities, tremendous talent coming out here. Many of those people, you know, explore the airport as an opportunity, not necessarily to work for the Airport Authority, but for companies that are doing business around the airport itself, on the airfield, at any of the three airfields. So very confident that we've got the workforce that we need combined with technology. We're in a great place to be able to staff the jobs of the future in this new terminal. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jeffrey from CareSource. I wanted to expand on that AI with you mentioned about the baggage security and Doug's recent comment. I can't get past getting in a car without a human driver yet. So I'm wondering, with this new design in the terminal in 2029, are the towers going to be all AI, no human, commercial airplanes, all technology AI? Are we headed in that area, or are we going to still have the human element to reduce one's stressful flying experience?
Thank you for the question. I think the short answer there is we don't have any areas right now where we see AI replacing humans. What they do is make the human role more efficient. And in the aircraft, there's always going to be two pilots. That is not changing in the foreseeable future. So when I mention advanced air mobility, that may be a single piloted operation, but there will still be a human pilot flying that. That is what is being test flown right now. In the air traffic control tower, AI is helping modernize our national air traffic control system, which is in desperate need of modernization. That is one area where we're struggling to meet demand, and that is air traffic controllers as a national airspace system in the U.S. And so the FAA is working on how to crank out controllers faster, but the AI helps each controller be more efficient and impactful in their work and make it safer than ever. So as I look across the airport industry, I don't see any roles that are being eliminated by AI, but they're going to make all of us better and more efficient, because it takes years to train a pilot. It takes years to train an air traffic controller and other jobs like that. What I mentioned about screening your bags, there's still a human being involved. It just allows us to get through the bags quicker and help the human focus on a bag that may have something in it that's not allowed versus thousands of good bags that still get looked at the same way. It just increases the human efficiency. So I appreciate the question, because it comes up in all kinds of venues, but we're not being replaced just yet, that's for sure. I can't promise the future, but we still need ourselves. We need each other. That's for sure. Thank you for that.
Hi, Jim Rousseau with the Ohio Air and Space Hall of Fame. Just wondering if the airport had any plans for the 1929 terminal in the southeast end of the airport facility.
Thank you for the question, sir. Not by design, but many of our team walked through that building yesterday. For me, it was the first time going through the 1928 terminal. And so then I also read the book last night, because I was so intrigued by what I saw. We are in a conversation with the board of the Air and Space Museum. We need to decide what the future of that facility is. It looks like a 100-year-old building when you go in it. The history around it is incredible. And as we approach the centennial of the airport itself and we open a new terminal in our centennial year, what we're doing with that terminal building is important. And so that's an open conversation. We haven't really landed on what that future is. The Airport Authority does own the building, and we take that very seriously. There's some really incredible pictures of incredible American icons who were there on July 8th, 2029, when they opened that terminal building and opened the whole airport. It's a fascinating history, and I'm in awe of it to some degree. So I appreciate the question. I don't have a great answer for you, because we don't know yet, but we are taking that responsibility very seriously, and look forward to figuring something out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Darren. Dave Dixon asks, can you describe any plans for EV charging infrastructure in the new terminal or parking area?
Thanks, absolutely. So in that new parking deck that I mentioned, there will be about 100 EV charging stations on the top floor. It's a 5,000 space deck. What you see parking garages going away from right now is charging on the lower levels. There have been several incidents of when an EV catches fire, it's hard for fire departments to access that. They're not easy to put out. So all of those EV charging stations on the top level is brilliant design. It's what everybody else is trying to do right now, but vastly expanding our ability to provide EV charging within a very short walk of the terminal building.
I have a quick question that nobody really wants to think about is safety. When you say you're expanding, having so many airplanes and services in the same space with more free space to do something with, it makes me wonder, is safety one of the main considerations? Because that certainly is for the flyers.
Yeah, thank you. And I really appreciate that point being raised, that because I didn't mention it, and I should have, that safety is the first stop of everything we do every day. And that is true for the entire U.S. national airspace system, whether we're talking about pilots, air traffic controllers, more gates, we're building a ramp so that there's more room to park aircraft. We're integrating technology so that it's easier for pilots to find their way around. There will still be people, as I've said, so it's important that flying be even safer in the terminal environment. Of course, we don't control what happens once an aircraft is in the air. But I will tell you, having been in this business for, you know, 3+ decades, it's never been safer than it is right now. It has felt like there's more visibility into incidents and accidents that happen because there's everybody with a camera now. And so you see everything that's happening. That's true in all of our lives, right? So we have more visibility into some of the accidents or incidents that have happened, but it's amazing how quickly our industry learns when something does happen. I'll give you one quick example, and that there was an unfortunate accident in Newark where a fire truck was crossing the runway and an aircraft hit it. The FAA is already inducing technological changes to how we operate. We are making changes in Columbus to make that less likely and even impossible for that to happen. Now, it's unfortunate that sometimes it takes an incident like that to trigger more change, but that's just reality, that sometimes it does, and we learn quickly and we adapt because we all want the same thing. We want you to feel safe when you're flying. We want you to feel safe when you're at the airport, whether that's an aviation incident or a security incident of some kind. So we have a police force, a fire department, lots of people dedicated to safety every day, and they are the tip of the spear of what we do. So please know that we never take our eye off that, ever.
Jared, I'm going to make one comment because I can't let this go without making a follow-up comment to something you talked about earlier. For those of you in the audience who know me, there is no doubt in your mind that I am uber competitive. And so I'm just going to say we compete against Kansas City a lot, but I am looking forward to this new airport being at least equally as good or better so we can continue to win.
Yeah, love that spirit. That's great. Did you all learn anything today? I sure did. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you all to talk about this subject. It is such an exciting time to live in this area, and it's such an exciting process to see play out in real time. When you go to the airport, you're going to see that progress time and again when you're dropping a passenger off or you're flying out yourself. It's a pretty awesome thing to be a part of, and frankly, only probably once in a generation or once in a lifetime do many of us get to experience this. So it's a pretty special time to be a part of this community, and it's an honor and a privilege to talk to you about it today. And Sophia is going to come back and wrap up the program.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we explored what's ahead for aviation in our region. We looked at how growth will depend on new airport innovations and investments, like the brand new $2 billion passenger terminal now being built in Columbus. At this week's forum, we heard from Darren Griffin with the Columbus Regional Airport Authority and Deborah Shearer with One Columbus. Your host was Jared Smalley with NBC4. This week's forum was sponsored by the Columbus Regional Airport Authority. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. The Columbus Dispatch was our live stream partner. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep learning about this week's forum topic, our fantastic partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Building of an Airport, Port Columbus by Robert Kirk. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.